Back together, you and I, on a midweek Wednesday, March 16th, 2022, on Connecticut Today. During the show, I kept reminding Fairfield County residents that some lawmakers in Hartford apparently want to exert more control over local zoning regulations. Our credit card expert, Paul Oster, joined in to describe what rate hikes from the Federal Reserve could mean for your credit card payments. And finally, Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong talked about the continuing battle in Hartford over juvenile justice reform. And if you live in Fairfield County or New Haven County, perhaps, where the Metro North rail line runs through, or, you know, maybe up through Upper New Haven County toward Hartford, where that other rail line, the north-south rail line, runs through for CT Rail, and maybe you live in areas out on the eastern part of the shoreline, Brantford-Guilford, heading out toward New London County. How do you feel about the fact that there's another House bill that's been introduced, and we talked about this earlier in the show, that in a sense would allow state legislators to take some control of how areas in some cities and towns are able to designate their zoning. Now, the genesis of this is all from a group called Desegregate Connecticut. It's headed by Sarah Bronin, who is the wife of the mayor of Hartford, Luke Bronin. And they started out, you remember, a couple of years ago, they went after, I think, Woodbridge or Bethany, saying, well, it's a racist city or town. And I think the mayor of Hartford actually said that, and he was forced to apologize for it or recant it. But this zoning bill, now get this, and let me know, what do you think this is a good idea? Perhaps if you live in Lower Fairfield County or anywhere near, say, the Metro North New Haven line, which thousands of people take every day, a new zoning bill. Now, this is the state saying this, not anybody on a local PZC, a planning and zoning commission or a zoning board. A new zoning bill would allow denser housing development around Connecticut's train stations. The goal would be making housing more affordable and providing easier access to transportation. Now, this is a story in the Connecticut Post, Ginny Monk's story. Actually, this came out of the Mirror as well. It's House Bill HB 5429. It would require towns. Now, again, it would not say, can you please do it? This would be a requirement here. Coming from the state, this is called bigfooting, as in the creature, the Bigfoot who comes in and steps all over things. This is called bigfooting. And it would allow the state to come in and bigfoot in towns. It would require towns to allow housing with at least 15 units per acre within a half mile of any passenger, commuter rail, or bus rapid transit station. And at least 10% of the units would have to be designated as affordable. So, and you can weigh in on this if you'd like, at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So again, I'll read that for you slowly. HB 5429 would require towns to allow housing with at least 15 units per acre. That's a pretty tight lot there for 15 units. Within 1/2 mile of a passenger, commuter rail, or rapid transit system. So in a sense, what this bill is doing is it's creating a state-level zoning regulation within a half mile of a rapid transit station, a bus station, or a commuter rail station. You know what that is? Metro North. You know what the target is? Fairfield County. Next stop, Fairfield, Fairfield Metro, Norwalk, Rowayton. I mean, she made a new town up, Norwayton. Rowayton, South Norwalk, East Norwalk. There you go. Oh, boy, huh? About this. Several local officials and legislators spoke out against the bill, saying it would primarily increase density and not affordability. They also said the bill doesn't take into account the unique needs of Connecticut's towns. And I think they have a point on the affordability here, because it says at least 10% of the units would have to be designated as affordable. So wait a minute. 90% of them could be unaffordable. So if you're a developer and this thing is passed and you say, geez, I can take that 1 acre lot over there, I can squeeze 15 units there, right? And at least 10% have to be designated as affordable. So 10% of 15 units is 2 units, roughly. So I can make the 2 units affordable and keep 13 of them priced up the wazoo. The wazoo interstate, especially if it's Fairfield County. Now, this bill will go into effect pretty soon, 1 October of this year, 2022. They're not going to pass this in an election year, would they? Developer, now, here's the thing that should really worry you. But maybe you're not worried. Maybe you like this. Just saying. Under the, are you listening? Fairfield, Westport, Southport, Norwalk. Are you listening? Greenwich, Old Greenwich, Riverside, Cos Cobb. Are you listening? Under the bill, developers would not need to undergo the public hearing process to build in those areas. What? So under this bill, I guess there would be no local control? And decisions on permit applications must be issued within 65 days. So here comes the, as our esteemed late Governor Bill O'Neill used to say, old bartender Bill, here comes the state of Connecticut. It was one word with Bill O'Neill, state of Connecticut. Just take state of Connecticut, run it all together. Ah, I miss Bill. So it's the state of Connecticut coming in and just bigfooting all you towns down there. There you go. Supporters say that the bill supports the concept often called transit-oriented development and would increase the overall housing stock in the state. Supporters also say the zoning would increase foot traffic to local businesses close to the stations. So this is kind of interesting, folks. This is the textbook example here of when a larger government comes in and says, well, you know, yeah, you're worried about crime in your areas and you're worried about foot traffic and density and all this. But you know what? We know better. We do. We do. No matter where you are, you might get hit with a little more if you use credit cards. Why? Well, we've talked about this on the show. And you hear about the Fed's going to raise rates. What's going to happen? That won't affect me. Maybe it will. Who knows? We're joined to talk about this and explain this to us. Paul Oster is the guest. Paul is referred to as America's credit repairman. He's regularly seen and heard on local and network radio and television, including CNN, NBC, Fox News, and elsewhere. Paul is the founder and CEO of Better Qualified in Eatontown, New Jersey. Paul, it's Paul here on WICC in Bridgeport. How are you, sir?
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's talk about this, Paul. Now, we're hearing that, okay, inflation is somewhat out of control right now, and the Feds are going to maybe raise interest rates to slow it down. But, Paul, what does that mean to the person who may be wondering, hey, how does this affect me, especially if I'm running, you know, revolving credit here? How would that work?
Yeah, so unfortunately, most of the credit cards that are in the hands of consumers are variable rate interest cards, which means when the Fed raises the rate, the interest rate on the APR and the interest rate on those credit cards goes up. So, you know, a quarter point raised by the Fed will probably equate to a 1 point interest rate jump to our credit cards. Mm. Now, 42% of all adults with a credit card, unfortunately, increased our credit card balances during the pandemic. So it's like the perfect storm. And it's not good. You know, when you look at, if you have $5,000 a credit card balance and you've only been paying the minimum payment, you know, it could take you decades, like 30 years, believe it or not,
I know.
You know, to pay it off. And you wind up paying about, you know, $19,000-$20,000 in interest. That's on $5,000. So if you have $10,000, $20,000. So look, this is a quarter point raise. It's only the beginning, right? The Fed might raise rates 5 more times, 6 more times, who knows? So I'm not saying you have to panic right now, but you do need to put a plan in place to get out of credit card debt as quickly as possible.
All right, Paul Oster is a guest. Paul, hang on. I want to be right back to you and continue this, because when you said a quarter point from the Fed is going to translate to 1 point of interest, I'm like, wow. So we'll talk more about this. Hang on. Paul Oster is with us. He is referred to as America's Credit Repair Man. You may have seen him or heard him on CNN, NBC, Fox News, and elsewhere. What are you going to do if the rates go up? Paul will explain to us better. First, though, traffic and weather together, 336 on WICC. The gentleman's website, by the way, betterqualified.com. Check it out online. Run it all together. Two words, betterqualified.com. Paul Oster is the guest, referred to as America's Credit Repair Man. You've seen him on CNN, NBC, Fox News, and places like that. So, Paul, previous to the break, I just want to make sure people understand this. So if we hear the Federal Reserve, right, is increasing the interest rate by a quarter point, so you said that translates to a point. So, in other words, if I'm paying 17% interest, that goes up to 18%?
That's right. That's right.
And do they do this? Does the Fed do this, Paul, to slow down the economy, to make it more expensive to borrow money?
They do. Typically, when the cost of borrowing money goes up, you know, things start to slow down. So believe it or not, this was a very necessary move by the Fed. Let's face it. You know, we've been running around in a 0% historically low interest rate environment, and you can't sustain that either. So again, they're going to phase it in, but we have to be prepared, because this is not just for credit cards. You know, look at the 30-year fixed rate on mortgages. It's now up over 4%. We were down below 2%. You know, so again, those were kind of ridiculously low, but the reality is that's what we've had for years now. So there's going to be a wake-up call. There's going to be a reality check. You know, on a mortgage, if you have a $400,000 mortgage, it's probably about $200 more, each full percentage point when it goes up. And that could be $70,000 more in interest over the life of the loan. Home equity lines of credit, unlike variable rate mortgages, which can readjust every year, if and when the Fed raises this rate, home equity lines of credit, the interest rate goes up immediately. So if you have a HELOC right now, lock in the interest rate that you're at right now, because it's only going to get worse. If you haven't used it, you might not want to use it. You know, if you were basing the calculations off, a previous low interest rate. So we have to be really careful. Auto financing, every single financing product that's out there is going to see an uptick in the interest rates, you know, how much it is. And look, this is, unfortunately, again, this is just the first of many raises by the Fed. So put the plan in place to get out of credit card debt first and foremost.
Paul Oster is the guest, the website betterqualified.com. So, Paul, I would imagine if this keeps going on and we get a quarter point here, a quarter point here over the next few months, I would guess, correct me if I'm wrong, that there may be some pushback by some of these industries, housing, automobiles, tech, electronics. Is there going to be a pushback to the Feds and say, hey, you know, what are you doing here? We want people to buy our products.
Well, no, because everyone also realizes that inflation is out of control, and you do not want to go down that road. I mean, we could be looking at double-digit growth in inflation, next quarter, and you can't sustain that either. I mean, the dollar won't be worth anything, and we'll be in a lot of trouble. So this is necessary. It's a delicate balancing act by this Fed. And look, this is unlike any other time in history. So it's not like they can go back and say, okay, this is kind of like 1975 and we can do this and do that. We are in unprecedented territories coming out of a worldwide pandemic. We have, you know, we're on the brink of World War III. We have all sorts of, you know, external pressures out there that are having an effect, the supply chain, the great resignation. It's a really crazy, crazy time. So the Fed needs to do what they have to do to kind of cool off the engine a little bit, let things cool down and try and settle back down to normal before it's too late and we're really spiraling out of control.
You used, Paul Auster, the word unprecedented. Most people hear that and they say, uh-oh, so I'll ask you to polish off your crystal ball, which I'm sure you've done over the past few weeks, and tell my listeners here, how long does this go? Now, I know you're not inside Mr. Putin's head, and we don't know what's going to, you know, come up here with maybe another variant of the coronavirus, but how bad could this get, Paul?
I think, you know, we're in for at least a 12 to 24 month period where, you know, things are going to be a little bit volatile, or I should say more volatile than they have been in the past 3 to 5 years. And again, you're going to see the balance act between inflationary pressure and the Fed trying to cool things off. Look at the housing market. I mean, it's so out of control. People are back to the crazy bidding wars, $100,000, $200,000 over asking price. There is no inventory. So the average consumer has to know that there's no plans out there to help us, right? So All of this is going to go on with or without us, right? So take a look at your own situation. And unfortunately, most people don't have a household budget, right? They live paycheck to paycheck. They live month to month in a crisis situation. The month, you know, they run out of money before the end of the month, but there's a reason for that. And you have to figure out what that reason is. I mean, look, basically we're all on fixed income, right? So we have to figure out where all the money's going. And people don't understand. They're called convenience stores for a reason. Wawa, Quick Check, 7-Eleven. Just stay out of them.
How well I know.
You know, now is the time to consider a credit card, a balance transfer to a 0% interest rate. But you can only do that if you have the plan to pay off that balance within, most of them are 12, 18, 24 months. If you don't have a plan to do that, don't pay the fee, because at the end of that term, if you haven't paid it off in full, you now get hit with all of the deferred interest rates. So you wind up in a worse position. But if you can look at your expenses and you can say, you know what, I'm not going to stop for a coffee and a stale bagel every day. I'm not going to hit it on the way home. I'm not going to go out to drinks 3 or 4 nights a week. I'm going to stop going out to dinner 2-3 nights a week, 2-3 times a month. You know, I'm going to stop going on these crazy vacations. And I'm not saying you have to do it for a lifetime, but put a disciplined plan in place, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, and focus on your credit card debt, which means you have to stop spending on the credit card, right? That's first and foremost, figure out a way that you don't need to use the credit cards. And then it's called debt stacking, right? So if you have more than one credit card, you have to focus on the credit card with the highest interest rate first. Mm-hmm. Now you have to pay the minimums on the other card, but you're going to stack the debt. You come up with $100 at the end of the month. I don't care if it's $20. You take the entire $20 and you put it towards the credit card with the highest interest rate. And even if it's just a couple of points difference, half, whatever it is, what most people do is they'll pay an extra 10 here, 15 here, 20, 20, 20. It makes them feel good, right? I paid all my cards down a little bit more than the minimum. Mathematically speaking, the best thing to do is put it all towards that card with the highest interest rate.
The website, betterqualified.com. Paul Auster has been the guest. Paul, good talking to you. Good luck, and hopefully we can chat down the road. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
Appreciate it, Paul. Appreciate it. Paul Auster. It's spelled O-S-T-E-R. It's pronounced Auster, America's credit repairman. You've heard him on NBC, Fox, CNN, and other publications and outlets as well. His first visit here, betterqualified.com is the website. Republican State Senator Tony Wong of Fairfield joins us, and I wanted to have Tony on today because, Tony, first of all, good afternoon to you. And, Tony, I can only imagine how a lot of folks in Hartford, particularly in the Republican caucus, Tony, feel frustrated in the caucus, because I know I am and my listeners are, that it seems that nobody, Tony, even wants to take a look at doing something maybe a little more innovative or a little more focused on habitual offenders when it comes to, unfortunately, Tony, some of these juvenile offenders that we're seeing out there multiple times, you know, going with violent crime here.
Absolutely, Paul. It's great to be with you. And indeed, we are talking about quality of life concerns and a safer Connecticut. But unfortunately, dangerous and sometimes tragic loss from these kind of incidences from all ages of crime, but especially juvenile offenders. And it's a unique situation, Paul, because obviously these are young individuals that are potentially not formative in their development and the total cognizance and understanding and sometimes lacks adult supervision. And with the COVID, some of the isolation and boredom that kind of manifests itself to kind of some of these insidious, dangerous behaviors is a problem. And I think the first thing we have to recognize, Republicans and Democrats as policymakers, is acknowledge that there is a problem. And if you say there isn't a problem, you're obviously not listening to the people that are extremely concerned. You're certainly not watching the news every day with incidents that are occurring. Because when you acknowledge there's a problem, then there is a approach to solutions. And that's what the standstill is, the fact that there is a disparate perspective on this, is there is no problem. The data show that we're safer than ever, versus the public imagery and the realities that is impacting people's lives, is people are concerned about their health and public safety. So it really is the first part, addressing that there's a problem. Now, the second part is, if they fully come to realize that, is how do we provide solutions? And this is where the Senate Republicans have come out in writing to address the fact that we all deserve to live in a state where people feel safe walking down the street, mm-hmm. driving in their car, sleeping in their homes. But we have to broaden the conversation to address the root causes of these rising crime, not just simply looking at the crime and then the punishment, which I think creates a hesitation, creates an uneasiness, a wall of resistance. But I think we need to understand, one, there's a problem, but then what we need to do when it comes to juvenile crime, we must correct the injustice that the young people are facing. That means we need to provide the right mechanisms, the right support, and the right interventions early. And we came out with a whole bunch of solutions that is looking to address that, from diversionary programs to expediting court systems and remediation. But also, you know, one of the interesting things is, how about sharing of information across judicial to the correctional facilities? It's a whole facet of things that I refer people, if they're interested, to read up on, is a safer Connecticut from the Senate Republicans.
All right, Tony, hang on. I want to get more into this with you. Tony Wong is the guest friend of the program here, talking a little bit about a little bit of the intransigence in Hartford to go after something that even Governor Lamont and his public safety commissioner, Jim Rovella, have said is something that we need to look at. First, though, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Fairfield Republican State Senator Tony Wong is the guest joining us for a few more minutes here. Another check of traffic and weather together. Wall Street coming up in about 6 minutes right here at 446 on WICC. Back to open phones later on. Tony, I understand I could probably speak a little more freely on this than some members of the legislature can, but Tony, it just disgusts me, and it must be frustrating for you guys and gals on both sides of the aisle when any time this subject, at least in the past couple of years, Tony, has been brought forth to say, listen, something is going on here. And it saddens me, Tony, that there are some, not everybody, Tony, but there are some who immediately, it seems that calling any proposals without a serious look at them, calling them based in racism and in phobias and in election year narratives, phony narratives, that drives me crazy. And I can imagine how many people it drives crazy around the state when they see these stories, Tony. And we have chiefs of police in cities like New Britain and Waterbury and on the shoreline here who say we're seeing too many of these repeat offenders too many times?
Paul, crime and the tragic results of crime doesn't just affect one group. It affects urban, it affects rural, it affects our suburbs, it affects African-Americans, Latinos, Asian-Americans, Caucasians. To use that as a justification to not acknowledge the problem is another denial that doesn't address the issue at hand. To use it a race card or a partisanship divide, here's my answer to that. Talk to anyone who has lost a loved one, who has suffered a traumatic invasion to their privacy and to their safety. They don't care what party it is. They don't care what color or ethnic background or socioeconomics. The reality is crime is crime, and we need to get to the root of this challenge. But again, you need to go back again. You need to acknowledge and address that there is a problem and then to move forward. And we propose these kind of pathways to look at, better judicial system collaboration, a faster tracking in which juvenile repeat offenders are acknowledged and treated a little bit differently than a first-time juvenile offender. But the system, the judicial system, the correctional system, and our law enforcement, as well as public advocates, need to understand, you talk to anybody, these repeat juvenile high potential dangerous crimes, violent crime individuals, they know who they are. The ability for them to remain out on the street is a failure of our system to protect innocent people.
Absolutely. In fact, Tony, I pointed out on the program here when I read some of these news releases verbatim that we get from, you know, local police departments in Fairfield and New Haven County and all over the state. And Tony, it seems like I'm seeing at least more and more in these releases where the departments are being very careful how they say, but they will say something like, quote, the suspect, a juvenile, has had several previous encounters with our officers and so police department. So I think that's a Tony, that's a little bit of a red flag going up there to say, hey, we've got to do something here.
Without a doubt. And first acknowledging there's a problem and trying to address the post-crime or the post-recidivism or reentry process is critical. But we got to get to the root of the problem, Paul. And I think that's another facet that we need to do a better job. Is it COVID? Is it the isolation? Is it the boredom? Is it a lack of economic opportunities or diversionary programs or mentor availability? We need to address that in a multi-front attack on crime and the prevention of that. So one of the things that I looked at is we're always talking about crime and then punishment as a focal point. I am focused on addressing the fact, how do we get to the core of prevention? And I'm doing a program with reentry and career resources next Tuesday, in which we brought in. We brought in the Judicial Department. We brought in the Department of Correction. We brought in from the Hartford Foundation, the Strategic Community Partnership. And we brought in Representative Rosario, who has been a tremendous advocate because has a young adult growing up. He has had his older brother, where I've heard stories, who has been incarcerated and served as a tremendous reminder of the injustices of incarceration. And we're hoping to bring in the judiciary leadership to offer their viewpoints. But for us to have a conversation to say, look, good people can make mistakes. How do we help them so they don't go the career path of danger and recidivism and criminal life, that we have a support necessary to get them, and most important of all, a support mechanism to prevent them from even going that track. We always talk about the 6 degrees of separation. If we make some efforts in prevention and helping diversionary programs and have mentor programs and initiatives that reentry is doing right now to help people forge a more positive, contributing life after reentry, this is what we need to focus on, as well as looking at crime and punishment. And that may differ me from some of my Republican colleagues, but I do believe in order to create a safer Connecticut, you need to address the system that needs to be revamped to prevent future actions of danger and public safety concerns. But we also need to approach a front of saying, how do we prevent this from happening at all?
Yeah. And Tony, finally, in about the minute we have left, one thing I did read in those proposals from the Republican caucus that I liked was having more of an outreach in certain urban areas from the state's vocational technical schools, the VOTEC schools. Look, it may not be for everybody, Tony, but you know it may appeal to one or two or three young men or young women in a neighborhood who say, listen, maybe I can just get away from these guys and become an electrician or an HVAC or plumber, make decent money and live a cleaner life.
I think it's an absolute important and integral part. As a member of the Governor's Workforce Council, we need to look at creating pathways and economic opportunities. When you have an investment to your future and know that you can plan 5 years, 10 years, and 20 years into your future that looks bright and promising, you're less inclined to go into the danger and potentially crime-filled venues that is appealing at that moment in time. But I think if people have a vocation and a pathway that they see that they can grow and prosper and break the cycles of poverty or challenges that they encounter, that is the pathway, as I talked about. It is about creating opportunities, but also to give a pathway of prevention. It is much easier to be able to help prevent and aspire people than it is to punish them and have the additional cost of incarcerating them.
Tony Wong, thank you. Tony, be good. We'll talk down the road. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Paul. Have a great day.
All right, thanks. And once again, Tony's panel discussion is going to come up, and this hearing is coming up this coming Tuesday, the 22nd, at the Legislative Office Building to discuss juvenile crime as well as reentry programs.